the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, where we discuss all things crypto-related. Your host, Kieran Ryan.
Word on the street is that the banks are about to enter the crypto market, a sharp turnaround from their previous hostility to crypto as a supposed gateway to fraud and illicit activities. What this likely means is that you'll soon be able to buy Bitcoin and a few other cryptos on your banking app. That means competition for the crypto exchanges like Luno and Valour, and the banks have a huge advantage, more than 50 million customers between the five major banks in South Africa alone. What about lending using crypto as collateral? Now, you can do that with your house. Why not Bitcoin? The banks are not there yet, but they say they're watching events. International banks such as JP Morgan Chase and Zappo Bank allow for this already, and so do some crypto providers in South Africa, notably Valour and Getters Capital. It's clear that some big changes are on the way in the crypto market, and to help us understand this better, we're joined by Warren Dietz, Chief Investment Officer at Getters Capital. Hi, Warren. Thanks for your time. What are you hearing about the banks entering the crypto space?
Thank you so much for inviting me. It's a really, really interesting space, and I think you touched on it in your introduction. The attitude towards crypto has fundamentally changed, specifically in the past couple of years, but it has been changing over time. And I think a big part of that is regulators starting to step up to the plate, and then banks realizing that there's no opportunity anymore to keep this away. They can't keep crypto out of the market. It's here to stay in some fashion, so they have to get involved. I think the banks are still struggling with an unclear regulatory environment. They know they need to be in the space, but I think they're slowly dipping their toes. They're building departments around it so that they can at least understand and have some knowledge and some DNA in the firm over time so that when they're ready to fully dive in, they at least have the experience or some semblance of experience in the space. I've had a lot of questions. I've had a lot of discussions about where and what they're looking at. For now, I think they're just trying to learn the space and make sure that they have those educated people in their teams. Where they're going to next, I think, will be driven by where regulation goes and, quite frankly, where scandal goes in the market as well. I think, you know, banks are very focused on their reputations. They should be. They're very focused on their banking licenses. They're very focused on not having one small department take down the entire mothership. So I think, you know, there has to be an element of conservatism for traditional banks.
Yeah, I mean, we've heard that the banks are, some of the banks anyway, have developed custody wallets, digital wallets. So they've made that step, and that clearly indicates that there's something coming behind that. What services do you think that they will offer initially?
So it's a great question. Banks, traditionally, we look to for securing our funds. Now, a lot of the DeFi people listening in on this are going to say, well, that's the exact opposite of what they do. But most consumers look to banks to secure their funds. And I think looking for a safe space to store your wealth, I think, is going to be a big part of it. Banks are experienced at custody, whether it be in the equity space or just in keeping your cash safe. And I think if they want to generate a customer base who is looking at the space, giving them some way to store their assets that is safe, that is reduced risk of hacks, I think is a great place to start. And I think that's how you get people hooked on the product. And I'm very excited about that. I think one of the weaknesses we have in the industry is that safe crypto storage is incredibly complicated. And whatever you knew last week changes this week. It's almost impossible for someone entering the space to truly understand it. So to be able to say, well, my bank stores are safely for me and hopefully has some kind of insurance against it in the background, I mean, I think it's a fantastic service. I would arguably use that service. I think one of the weaknesses we currently have, especially in South Africa, is there is no insurance for crypto endeavors. There are a few entities offshore who do provide insurance, but it's a huge weakness. And I'm hoping that having, you know, tier one banks stepping into the space will also draw the tier one insurers into the space and create the ecosystem that we need for that service. I think once that service is in place and once you're storing wealth, you can start to use that. In the same way banks take deposits, they can use that for incremental services. And I think that's when they start to step into the lending services, the trading services, having trading and storage go hand in hand. But I think then they can start to offer products around that, payment gateways, allowing payments through crypto. And I think it all builds on the safe storage of crypto for consumers.
Right. I mean, one of the questions that obviously arises from that, if they're going to offer custody services, they already charge you a fee for custodying your cash. Will they do the same for crypto? Now, people in South Africa have been spoiled because you can custody your crypto on Luno, Valour, and the other exchanges at no charge. And now, you know, will you get charged a fee for that? That might encourage the exchanges to say, well, why are we offering it for free when the banks are charging? We might have a competitive frontier opening up there. But the other interesting one is crypto-backed lending. Now, your company, Getters Capital, recently launched a crypto-backed lending product. Describe how this works and what has been the response from the market so far. I know it's very new, so maybe you don't have a lot of data, but tell us what has been your experience so far.
Yeah, thank you for that, Kieran. We've been working on the product for about 6 months, and it's not so much the design of the product that's the challenge to work on. It's the safe storage of our borrowers' assets. Because fundamentally, we are taking charge of their crypto and then storing it safely for them. And that has two elements. One, obviously, our clients need to be comfortable with us. I think if someone new without a reputation steps into the market, I think it's very difficult to pass your crypto to them. I mean, we've been around for 10 years. I'm sure people still have a question passing their crypto to us in safe storage. And then secondly, it's where we keep it safe, right? Because I'm not going to keep it in my exchange account, and I'm definitely not going to keep it in a cold storage stick that I'm walking around with. That just opens you up to a whole world of risk. So we've had to find safe mechanisms being using international brands for custody and making sure that our customers feel comfortable that their crypto is stored safely. The rest of the lending, the rest of the loan is no different to using your house or using maybe even a more accurate example is a share portfolio. The fact of the matter is it's a wonderful sort of chimera of DeFi and traditional finance. And we just have to get people comfortable with passing their crypto over. So in the sense of doing a loan, it would be the exact same thing. You prove the value of your assets, you prove your ownership of the assets being passing on your wallet to us so we can see the wallet code, identify what is in that wallet. We obviously do our own due diligence in the background to ensure that those coins are not the product of illicit transactions. And there's a lot that has to be done around that. And arguably, that's the largest risk for the lenders. You definitely don't want to be part of assisting in money laundering. So we use various other applications and audit processes to ensure that the coins have not come from illicit transactions. Once it's done, it's a very simple process of transferring the crypto into our safe storage and lending the money as if it was against a home. It's just that part, the crypto part, that people have to get comfortable with. Now, you asked what the response has been. We've had a lot of phone calls from people wanting to understand the process. We've learned a lot from speaking to our customers as well about what they would like. I would say the market is 9 months too early, but we want to be the leaders. We want to be the pioneers. We want to build it with what customers are asking for and grow and develop the product in that fashion. So I would say this will be a fringe business in the next 9 months and may well replace a lot of lending in the next 3 years.
It is an interesting subject because the stats show that about 7 to 10% of South Africans, adult South Africans, own crypto or have owned crypto at some point. Now, the banks with 50 million customers, the five major banks have more than 50 million customers between them. That's a huge potential market for them to start attacking. And it would seem logical that if they are going to lend to you against your house, which they do, and they're going to lend to you against other assets, that they would probably start in a very tentative way to look at crypto as a potential to increase that. Where do you see this going? Is this, I mean, it's already been available for a long time. People in the crypto space know about DeFi lending, decentralized finance lending products. These are all done on smart contracts. So they will give you a loan to value of sometimes 25%, sometimes 50% against your Bitcoin. And if the Bitcoin price drops, this, of course, is the big risk, is that they will liquidate your Bitcoin, recover their loan, and pay you back the balance. I think you do it in a slightly different way. It's not done by smart contracts. There's a manual intervention there, if I understand it correctly.
Yeah, exactly. What we're trying to do is we're trying to not have a product that's just dripping in jargon and complexity. We're not trying to necessarily attract your crypto experts. We're trying to attract individuals who are well-versed in traditional finance who want to use just another asset class of security. The fact that the crypto is security, it just means there's additional assets our customers can use. We don't want to terrify people by suddenly having significantly complex jargon, complex structures. For us, we're trying to make this look as much as it can like a traditional loan. The only difference is that instead of using X as security, you're using Y as security. And it's quite difficult to have one foot in traditional finance and one foot in DeFi because you do have to set it at the right tone. Now believe me, what you've mentioned before in the complexity of smart contracts is very likely the future. I would be amazed if, you know, that isn't the standard in the next 5 years. But the market isn't ready for that quite yet, or at least in South Africa. I think internationally it is a slightly different framework. But it's very easy to adapt from where we are now to that, especially at the request of our clients. But for now, we're trying to keep it as simple as possible to whet people's appetites and to, you know, to form a little bit of a footprint in the space and hopefully also draw competitors into the space. I think, you know, us just doing it now, the industry or the structure doesn't have the credibility that it requires. Once banks step in and other entities do it, once there are multiple competitors, it weirdly creates credibility for the industry and actually will likely draw more people into the space as customers. And we're comfortable with that. I welcome people to start doing what we did.
Right. Let's talk about the tax benefits to lending using crypto. Now, a lot of the guys who maybe this is one of the great secrets of the crypto market. A lot of the guys early into crypto, they actually survive on borrowing against their own crypto. And they just defer payments. So, and this is, of course, the great billionaire secret, you know, just live on borrowing so that you can save on tax. Just explain on the, what's going on here.
Yeah. So just to start with, I'm not a tax advisor, and I also don't want a phone call from SARS. The truth of the matter is that it's only when you sell your assets that you lock in a capital gain. Again, this is no different to you bought a home in Hermanus 30 years ago for R1 million. It's now worth R10 million. You go to the bank. You have a choice. You can sell that home and pay your capital gain, or you can go to the bank and borrow against the value of the house and then slowly over time pay that back. The first one, selling the home, does attract capital gains. The second one doesn't, because you are just taking a loan. Now, of course, it attracts interest and a whole other list of costs, but in the end, you don't attract that capital gain, and it's no different with crypto. I think the only reason it's more extreme in the space is that 10 years ago, I mean, there's a 10,000x or whatever the number is appreciation in the value. So a lot of people who put in trivial amounts of money a while ago now have very non-trivial amounts of money, and they typically, the people who still have that crypto and have ridden the wave right up to now, also don't think we're stopping anytime soon. So it's not just about locking in a tax gain. They also don't want to lose their exposure to the market. And I think that's where it becomes very interesting. You put in R1,000 into Bitcoin and now you have R2 million in Bitcoin and you want to buy a house, a car, and you want to use that as your deposit. You could either liquidate that position, then move yourself from an exposure in crypto to real estate, which is fine. And I think, you know, depending on what your portfolio looks like, that may not be a terrible idea. But you also have an option to keep your exposure in both by leveraging the crypto to buy another asset. And you're not paying the tax cost now. And I think that's a big part of it. Look, I think at some point, if you're right about your view on crypto, you're going to have a bigger tax bill in the future. But happy days, you've made another 10x or whatever it is you're expecting. And you also got to own a home. So I think there's a big focus on that. It's probably the most common question I get, and I always preface it with that answer. I'm not a tax advisor, but do your own research on this. But it is one of the advantages of leveraging assets you have, crypto, whatever it might be. It does not have to just be a digital asset.
Right. Now, let's just go back to the crypto-backed product. And you no doubt this falls under the National Credit Act, so you would have to do a credit assessment on the person that is applying, no doubt. And there's a whole KYC process, know your customer process. You've got to onboard them. You've got to know a little bit about them. You've got to make sure that the money is, as you mentioned earlier, not from an illicit source. Then I guess the question is, how quickly does the person once all of that is done, how quickly does the person get access to the funds that he's borrowing? And what kind of interest is he likely to pay?
So I think it's an important point to distinguish between lending to individuals and lending to corporates. And there's a whole complexity around the National Credit Act. But in the simplest of terms, if we lend to individuals, it's governed by NCR, National Credit Regulation. If we lend to corporates, then it is not. And these are governed by different things. The FIC governs both of them. So you're still very much required to do detailed KYC. And I do think this is a space where I have run into it already, where people think, well, because you're lending in crypto, you don't need to do a KYC, you don't need to know anything. We do. This is traditional lending. We have to do the full work. It is a legal requirement for us to do the full KYC and DD. We can't allow the transfer of funds unless we know our client as much as we need to, right? So I think important to separate them out. Under individuals, it has to be done through an NCR entity. And then you're governed on your interest rates as well. And off the top of my head, it's prime plus, I want to say 7, Kieran, but I'd have to check. And that you are literally restricted as to what the maximum rates are, the maximum charges. You can't charge. There can't be secret fees. You can't load into the National Credit Regulator is very strict about this. So I would bank on around 22% per annum being the cost. Now, as a corporate, it can be higher. Now, obviously, as a corporate, you're protected by the corporate veil in many instances, and as such, it can often be riskier, and as such, can attract higher rates of interest. But really, each loan is assessed for the creditworthiness of the individual, or the risk of the individual, or corporate for that matter. But if you have all your documents in place, if you do the application, you have all your documents in place, it's measured in days. I mean, I don't want to promise 24 hours because then someone's going to come and bark at me if it doesn't happen. But 24 hours is a reasonable amount if everything's in check.
Right, Warren, let's wrap up here. Just give us a very brief summary of your career, because you do come from the banking sector and you're now in the crypto space. What is the story there?
Yeah, I got dragged kicking and screaming into DeFi, let me tell you. So my career started off as a trader for Deutsche Bank in South Africa, Deutsche Bank in London, Goldman Sachs in London, Goldman Sachs in Hong Kong, and then finished up at Barclays in Hong Kong. I've always been in traditional finance, equity, and some cross-product trading. And quite frankly, I abhorred crypto when it first came out, or when it first became in the public purview, is that I also thought it was rife with scams. I thought it was rife with illicit transactions. And then about 3 years ago, I was approached by a crypto arbitrage firm, Currency Hub, I'm sure you know, and they wanted me to bring some of the traditional finance mentality to a DeFi business. You know, create those walls, create the compliance that is of a traditional finance level. And so I was sort of forced to get up the curve very, very quickly. And and in that period of time, I think you just learn, you understand. And then I had the advantage, or I believe I have the advantage, that I can see it from both angles. I'm still very much more a TradFi person, but I can see that the convergence is inevitable. And that I think as long as we can bring the structures and the security and safety that traditional finance has into the DeFi world, I think you have a viable product that will replace the majority of DeFi businesses. Now, I know everyone in DeFi is, when I keep talking about regulation, is going to say, no, we need less regulation. That's not the case. We need more regulation, because without regulation, the consumer gets taken advantage of by the smart corporates. And we just can't have that for a sustainable industry. People must be protected. Unfortunately, corporates who want to act appropriately will still be outdone by corporates who don't, unless there's very strict regulation. So that's my, you know, I'm always been a big supporter of additional regulation, but regulation where the regulators use the industry as a sounding board for what they're doing.
Well, we're going to be watching the space with a lot of interest in the coming months and years, and how banks make their entry into the crypto market. And I want to thank you very much. That was Warren Dietz, Chief Investment Officer at Getters Capital.
Thank you, Karen.
Thanks for listening to the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, hosted by Kieran Ryan. To listen to our other podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.